And now, the podcast that makes a gross noise when you step on it, Unsquish the Fish, with your host, Ron Kenneth.
Hey, Dolphins fans, welcome to Unsquish the Fish. This is a football fan podcast exclusively for the fans of the Miami Dolphins. On today's show, we will be talking about Ryan Tannehill, as promised. And obviously, we're going to talk about some Deflategate, but we won't get too much into it because by the time you hear the show, you're probably going to be sick of hearing about Deflategate. But we're going to get into it a little bit. But a couple things. I just wanted to thank everybody that's downloaded and listened so far. I've actually had quite a bit of response. I've had some response on Facebook. I've had some emails. I've had some Facebook messages, people wanting to come on the show. It's very exciting. I really appreciate it. I hope that more people want to come on, more people email. And I have to say, when I was looking at all the stats, and Keith, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Ron.
All right, dude. By the way, we're bringing in Keith again for this Tannehill show. I wouldn't do it with anybody else. I'm sitting there looking at the downloads, and it's fun on this thing because you can see what state people download from. You can see what area people download from, all kinds of crap like that. So all of a sudden I see all the downloads for the U.S., what it is. And then all of a sudden I see this little international link that I had never seen before. So I'm going to click that. So I click on that and someone from France downloaded the show.
Nice.
I'm kind of thinking they thought it was like a podcast about fish recipes or something.
No, but remember the Dolphins are the number one team internationally that people root for.
Yeah, because news takes a long time to catch up. That's like when the movie Gone with the Wind came out. Like people thought as they watched it overseas, they thought that was happening now. So they still think it's 1972, 73. We're going undefeated. We're winning Super Bowls. They haven't even gotten to the Marino years yet.
Wow.
Yeah, they're way behind. But anyway, so whoever you are in France, bonjour, and thank you for downloading the show. And I can envision it was what you thought it was. Nice. I actually got some comments about the game changer. I think people got a huge kick out of that. I know we're going to wear it out. I can't. We've said it every single show so far. I just can't help myself.
It's hilarious.
It is. And the name Unsquish the Fish, somebody asked me where did I come up with that? I can't imagine anybody would be a Dolphins fan for any period of time and never have heard the phrase squish the fish, which is obviously something that the Bills and the Jets, and I'm not sure what AFC East rival even started the squish the fish, but they always say squish the fish. And since we've been getting squished so much since, well, pretty much over the last 10 years, 8-8, 8-8, 6-10, 8-8, 2-14, 8-8, 1-15, 8-8, I thought maybe we needed to unsquish the fish. So that was it. It wasn't anything I sat down really hard and thought, oh, man, what am I going to call this show? What am I going to call this show? Now, obviously, you know, I did a show a couple years ago, Keith, the Fin Fan podcast, which was a lot different than this. I didn't have the technology that I have here. I wasn't able to bring in calls. I didn't know anything about doing shows like this. So I kind of scrapped that, decided I'd take some time, learn, come back with something I hope is better anyway. And I do appreciate all of the downloads. Really appreciate it. I think it's exciting to go into iTunes and to Stitcher and just search Miami Dolphins and see me right next to Finsiders in iTunes and right at the top in Stitcher. I thought that was super cool. I was absolutely shocked by that. I was honored. So if you got friends who are Dolphins fans and they hadn't caught on to this show yet, just tell them about it. It's a lot of fun. We have fun doing it. And I'm going to be bringing on some other fans and bringing on some more writers and some bloggers. And we're just going to be talking about Dolphins. It isn't a podcast that's really ever going to turn into anything else. I think as far as I may stretch it is maybe in June, July, we'll do a little Dolphins fantasy football show where we just really highlight the Dolphins players. And if you did this show 4 or 5 years ago when Chad Henne was our quarterback, it wouldn't have been a very long show. But now you've got Tannehill.
Amen to that.
I was listening, and honestly, since I've been just devoting everything into this show lately, normally by now I've listened to some fantasy football podcasts. I'll admit, I've listened to by now, normally this time of year, a lot of fantasy football stuff. I'm kind of been ate up with it in the past. But for the first time yesterday, I decided, you know, I'm going to throw on my favorite fantasy podcast, and that's the Fantasy Focus. It's ESPN. Matthew Berry does it with Nate Ravitz and Stefania Bell. They're really awesome. He's hilarious. I would hope that one day that our show could be as good about the Dolphins that theirs are about fantasy football. But he was really high on Tannehill. Like, he had Tannehill as like a surefire top 10 fantasy quarterback. And I was shocked because I've been out of the game. I haven't looked at one ranking, nothing. So I just kind of found that very interesting. All right, man. Before we get into the Tannehill talk, you said on, I think it was the first episode, you said, when are they going to do something about them cheating, man? When's it going to end? When are they going to get theirs? And I'm paraphrasing now. I don't remember the exact words you used. Well, it looks like they got theirs pretty good. So what's your reaction?
Well, I'm pretty sure all Dolphin fans around right now are wishing that Brady would have got suspended for 8 games.
But... yeah, I hear that a lot.
But the biggest thing that I will say is the punishment, I mean, it's already got to the point that it's kind of been drowned out. But, I mean, I noticed a post that you put on before that you thought the punishment was just. But you actually brought up a very good point earlier today, as a matter of fact, in a conversation we were having on the phone about, you know, we're not just talking about Brady. We're talking about the football team as a whole, because when the ball is flat, doesn't have as much air in it, it's easier to hang on to, so you don't fumble as much. So I would be curious at how many fumbles New England had throughout the year compared to, let's say, other teams, just to see if that might give some insight on maybe there was some footballs deflated in other games during the season. Maybe games that some people thought New England might be upset with, or, you know, very close games where they played very good teams like in Indianapolis. I would be curious. When you said that, it started making me think. I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, this isn't the first time they've done it.
Yeah,
we all know that.
No way. When you got a dude on your team that calls himself the Deflator, he didn't just come up with that nickname like 5 minutes before the AFC Championship game.
Exactly. So they've done this before, and I would be curious what games or how many times they've done it and what their stats are when it comes to fumbles.
Well, I don't have exact numbers on that. I didn't look that up, but I know that listening to radio on more than one occasion I've heard over the past, even when this first broke when the news first broke right after the AFC Championship game, I'd heard some people mention that they were the best team for not fumbling, I guess is the word, the least fumbling team in the NFL over the past years, and it wasn't even close. It's by some kind of very wide margin. To me,
wow.
That's the thing that sticks in my craw the most and why I hope every single penalty sticks. Brady's penalties are his. Honestly, they're his. They're for what he did or didn't do, for his cooperation or the bit of lack of cooperation that they said he had. Because they said he mostly cooperated, except for the fact that he didn't want to give up these texts no matter what. Even though Ted yep. Wells said, here, he went to his agent and said, here, you have his phone. I'm not even going to look at it. And you tell me and give me anything you find maybe pertinent to this investigation. Literally, Ted Wells said that. And I'll just trust you. And he still wouldn't do it. And I heard Ted Wells say that today on ESPN. And he still wouldn't do it. So that's part of why Brady got a little bit more of a penalty. But the $1 million fine, the 2 draft picks lost, the fumbling thing to me is bigger. And it hasn't been talked about. But I think it's huge. When you don't turn over the ball in a game, like on your normal average, you know, that's why he really yep. must have been mad. Is it Stephen Ridley? Is that the guy who kept fumbling for the Patriots?
Yes.
They were probably saying, for God's sake, we deflate the damn balls when you're still fumbling it. That's probably what they were saying to him. If you can't hold on to this ball, you can't hold on to any ball. I would be scared to have that guy on my team. He couldn't hold on to a deflated ball. I hate to see what he's going to do when it's full of air.
My biggest thing is I don't think their fourth round draft pick next year means anything. Well,
next year, 2017. Yeah, it was just a little extra. I think that kind of matched the Atlanta punishment for doing the piping in the crowd noise.
Right.
Because that's
right.
a competitive advantage. I think the first round pick is the one they're really sticking them with, and they're getting that partially because of what happened with Spygate.
Right, absolutely. But, I mean, we'll see what happens. You know, Brady's going to appeal it. I believe he's already said that he's going to.
And I'll be willing to bet it gets knocked down to two games, although I don't think it should, because when you give yourself a competitive advantage, like deflating balls or doing steroids, you get four games. There you go. Steroid users get four games for giving themselves a competitive advantage. Therefore, this should be four games and should stick. It shouldn't be knocked down, but I have this feeling, unfortunately, it's going to be knocked down. It is interesting, though, that the NFL, I mean, they had to do something. They couldn't suspend them zero games, but they were kind of in a sticky wicket that they're going to trounce out their product on Thursday Night Football to open the season with their New England Patriots Super Bowl championship, and Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be the quarterback.
And I mean, I'm not sure. I know they played Jacksonville, and I believe they played Buffalo, but I'm not really sure the other teams that they played.
Steelers? I know it's the Steelers, the Bills, the Jaguars. I can't remember the other team. I think it's three like bad defenses, except for the Bills, if I remember correctly.
So, I mean, they could honestly come out of that four-game suspension possibly being 2-2 or 3-1, which isn't a total loss when you got Brady coming back. So is it going to hurt the Patriots? I don't know. I mean, I know that last year the Patriots seemed to struggle in the beginning of the season.
They normally do a lot of seasons. Exactly. They struggle at the beginning anyway. So we may not really know what it looks like. They may end up with the same record they would have had. I mean, no one's a fortune teller, so we can't know that.
Exactly. But, I mean, we'll see how it pans out. We'll see what happens.
One last thing I want to say. I kind of mentioned it before. I think the first episode, I just want to make sure it is on the record. I promise you they are going to do everything in their power to unleash hell on every team they play. They're not going to be in it to win. They're going to be in it to absolutely destroy that team, run up the score just like they did before. Just one last time I want to say it. Be ready. When the Dolphins play, that defense better be ready, because they are going to be chucking the ball in the end zone every chance they get. They are not going to be conservative. They are not going to dink and dunk down the field. They are going to attempt to beat every team 55-3. I mean, that is the kind of – that is Belichick. That is Brady. That's what they did in 2007 after Spygate, and I promise you it's what they're going to attempt to do again. Now, they're in a situation where three of the best defenses in the NFL are in their division. So that might change some things, at least in those games. But I promise you, they're going to attempt to, especially when Brady comes back. That may not be the case when Garoppolo's there. I think they'll play to just try and win those games, try and manage through what his skills and abilities are, as I think he's, what, a second-year guy? Wasn't he a rookie last year, right?
Or is this I believe so, third year?
I'm not really sure. I think they'll just manage to that. But once Brady comes back, man, watch out. They are going to be trying, at least attempting to tear up teams. You wait. They'll be up by 2-3 touchdowns with just a minute or two to go and throwing the ball on fourth down into the end zone. You watch. They'll do it, man. I'm telling you, they'll do it.
I hope
they're that kind of team. They're that kind of players. That's the way they are.
I hope it's not a replay of 2007. But like you said, you know, three of the top defenses, you know, are going to be in that division. So I mean, we'll see if they're able to have the success, if that's what winds up happening. I mean, I don't know. We'll see, though. Time will tell.
All right, man. You ready to get to it?
Yeah, man. Let's do it.
It's the Ryan Tannehill Show. You can tell. Since this is FaceTime, please tell everybody what I got on right here. I just want to start off the show by letting everybody know what I'm wearing.
You got your Ryan Tannehill jersey, sporting it right now.
Supporting
the man.
That's right. So my first question isn't going to sound real supportive, but you got to answer me real honestly. See, I set Keith up because I said, I'm going to ask you a question at the beginning of this, and I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to ask, but it's going to set the show off into a particular tone go down a certain pathway. We spent 2+ hours talking about our entire team. Everything but special teams and kickers, because that's boring. But we talked about every unit of that team and what we liked, what we didn't like. And I think we walked away having a pretty good feeling about most of the team, correct?
I would say so, yes.
You know, maybe some questions on linebacker a little bit, questions on interior O-line, possibilities there, hopes there still. Not by any situation. There's not a unit on our team that we feel like, oh, man, we're in trouble. I just don't feel like that's the case. Interior O-line, probably the biggest question mark. So how good do you feel about the 52 players? And I say 52 because it's 53 on the roster. How good do you feel about that team? That's not actually the question I'm going to ask you. I'm setting it up, man.
I feel confident. I do feel confident. And I won't say anything other than that. I won't elaborate on that because I'll wait till you ask me this question that's probably going to send me through the roof. However, as each day goes on and I've looked at some things and I hear what people are saying, my confidence level is on the rise. We'll say that. It's on the rise. Now, we talked about, you know, we actually talked about in the first show, we talked about it in the second show, that a lot of things have to transpire, a lot of things have to work.
For all teams. Every team it's that
absolutely,
way.
Absolutely.
Things always have to just kind of come together the right way.
That's exactly it. If those things come together the right way and the football gods shine down and they say the Dolphin fans, the Miami Dolphin organization, it's been long enough, it's time to start working your way back to the top of the mountain, I'm very confident in what we will see. Okay. I really am.
I will agree that I like our roster this year. I know we got some youth, so I hear some specifically Omar Kelly saying he still thinks we're an 8-8 team because of the youth and there's going to be growing pains and blah, blah, blah. And I just look at the way the players they have that they acquired this year through the draft, through the offseason, actually fit this team. They're not just guys who supposedly are good, supposedly are fast, supposedly are athletic, but they actually fit exactly what they want to do and they seem to piece together like a nice puzzle. I think 52-man roster, we've got definitely a top 10 roster. I just don't see how we don't. Across the board, I feel that way. So given go ahead, Keith.
Even the stuff that you're hearing from the, you know, the rookie camp and stuff like that with the people that are showing up, I mean, all the ones that have been drafted, the ones that are, you know, undrafted free agents that are at camp, the one-year players that are out there right now or were out there, they were beasts. I mean, the coaches were like raving about them, like, you know, these kids are really doing it. You know, Parker is everything he was cracked up to be, so on and so forth. So, I mean, I'm really excited. And like I said, as the time goes on, the more and more I hear stuff, the more excited and the higher my confidence goes.
Okay. So then with that, I'm going to ask you a question. Not the question yet, but another setup question.
Okay.
What do you think our record's going to be this year? And I know we got a long way to go, so I'm not going to put you on the record with this yet. Literally, I'm not going to put you in stone with this. What do you think our record's going to be this year?
Once again, I'm not going to put myself on the record or on the spot when I say this. However,
Give me a range. Like, I think we'll win this many to this many games. Like a quick little – I mean, you can't say, I think we'll win somewhere between 4 and 14 games. But give me some kind of tight little two, three-number range.
It's going to be between 7 and 9 wins.
Now I'm going to ask you the question.
Go ahead.
And this is what's going to make everybody mad when they hear the answer, because when I ask you this, Keith, I am asking all of you the same question out there, the ones who are listening – ask yourself this question, and you have to answer honestly.
And before you ask it,
what a build-up for this question. It's ridiculous. I need to just ask it.
You are my boy. I've known you forever. You're my boy. I know how you think, and I know exactly what you're going to ask me.
No, I don't think
and
you do.
My blood's already
question,
starting to boil.
The question is not what's going to set you off. It's going to be your honest answer to this question. You see us between 7 and 9 wins. I think I see us more like 8 to 10 wins, somewhere in that range. Now I'm going to ask you the question. If Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback of this Miami Dolphins team, what would our record be? And I'm using Aaron Rodgers because I specifically think he's the best quarterback in the NFL, and I know there's others that may say no luck, whatever. Insert your best quarterback in the NFL. For me, it's Aaron Rodgers. Is it Aaron Rodgers for you, Keith?
I would have to go. Well, I mean, I would have to go Aaron Rodgers. I mean, most people are going to say Peyton Manning.
Okay,
just
well,
because it's Peyton Manning.
Yeah, yeah. If Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback of this 2015 Miami Dolphins, what's our record?
My honest opinion is I'm going to have to say I would give us two more wins, maybe three, only because of his experience and his knowledge of the position.
So you say there's no way on the worst season that you predicted, because you said 7-9 wins. So now you're telling me if Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback of this team, we are a 10-12 win team, meaning we're going in the playoffs and maybe winning our division and even possibly getting a bye if Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback of our team.
I would say so.
So what does that say about our confidence in Tannehill? Because I was around that same range. I'm thinking that Aaron Rodgers is worth a good 3-4 extra wins. And I'm not saying I'm not a Tannehill hater. I'm just being perfectly honest. If I look at it, you put Aaron Rodgers on this team, because I really like this squad. I really like this roster this year, even more than I liked last year's roster. And I am no professional at this. I am just giving you my official opinion. That's the test. How far has Tannehill come along? Is if he's the quarterback versus if the best quarterback in the league is the quarterback of your team, what's the win difference? The bigger the gap, the bigger the gap in those quarterbacks, and the bigger problem we have for going into 2015.
I'm going to explain to you why I think the gap is there. I think the gap is there because of the experience level, because of the knowledge level. And when I say that, you got to remember, Tannehill was what position in college?
Until the last year, really, he was a wide receiver.
Until the last year, he was a wide receiver. Aaron Rodgers has been a quarterback since he started playing football. So Tannehill had 1 year of college play, okay? He comes into the NFL after 1 year. He's still learning the position. Let's be completely honest. He was still learning the position of quarterback when he was put behind center in the National Football League.
Okay, so I'm going to say this. He was also put behind center in the exact system he ran in college with the exact same head coach. That's a lot bigger advantage than 99.9% of quarterbacks get.
You're absolutely right. But what he couldn't get ready for is the speed of the NFL.
That is 100% true. And not just the speed of his own players, but the speed of the defense. That is true.
Exactly.
I will give you that.
So that takes a long time. And listen, I'm a Tannehill fan. I've been a Tannehill fan since we drafted him. Our friend Sean, we argued at his house one night about them drafting him.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that next week. Next week, Sean's coming on the show, so we're going to get to talk about
that. Nice. And let him know I still have that argument recorded. But anyways.
Oh my God, I have to see. We have to try and play that. That was a great argument because me and him were both hammered out of our gourd. Wasn't it 2 days after we drafted Tannehill?
Actually, no, it was before. It was before we drafted.
See, I thought it was right after we drafted Tannehill. I thought it was after, and he said that was stupid. We should have taken blah, blah, blah. I don't even remember
Maybe
who
it
he
was.
Said. I think it was right
Maybe
after.
It was.
He thought it was stupid.
But if I'm not mistaken, and I mean my numbers may be off, and if they are, I apologize. But if I'm not mistaken, Tannehill's first year in the league, I believe he threw for almost 3,300 yards.
Yeah, it was something. It was in the mid-threes. Yeah, I remember that.
I think it was 3,300 yards, maybe just shy. And I believe it was interceptions were 13 picks.
Yeah, 12 or 13 picks. That's correct.
Which
and
isn't.
And it was 13 touchdowns, 12 picks or something like that, somewhere in that range.
Which, for a guy that went from 1 year in college to go into the NFL, isn't a horrible year.
No, it's
isn't
not
a horrible year.
And he had, and he really hit was he struggled. He was, I won't say devoid of talent. I mean, Hartline wasn't a talentless guy. Devon Bass wasn't a talentless guy, but he didn't have near the receiving squad he has this year or even last year. Or you know, it wasn't even close. Or had they brought in Gibson? Did they bring in Mike Wallace and Gibson? No, they didn't.
I don't think they
not his first year. They brought in Mike Wallace and Gibson the next year because it was 2012 was his first year. So he really had Devon Bass. He had
Hartline.
Yeah, I remember because we were watching Hard Knocks, and even Jeff Ireland said we got plenty of three, like fours, fives, and sixes when he was referring to wide receiver. We have four, fives, and sixes. We need to figure out who our one, twos, and threes were, which we never really figured that out. So he was, I mean, Clay wasn't as good as he was. He wasn't consistent.
No.
He was kind of coming in with very little weaponry, honestly.
So, I mean.
And then what did he throw the next season? I don't even know. Was it like 18, 19? I don't remember.
He actually, interception-wise, I think he threw, I think it was 17 or 18.
It went up, but what about touchdown-wise? I don't think the interceptions went up too much, but touchdowns went up, but they weren't.
Touchdowns did go up.
Were they 20, like somewhere around 20 or something? I can't remember.
20, 22, something like that. I think his yardage definitely went up because he almost threw for 4,000 yards that year.
Yep. And then last year he threw for 27 touchdowns.
27 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, and I believe he eclipsed the 4,200
yards, something like that. Which, that's kind of different than it was 10 years ago, though, those stats.
Absolutely. But he has progressively gotten better every year.
Has he? Now, well, I'm gonna argue with you on that, and here's why I'm going to argue.
Okay, go ahead.
He's progressively gotten better. Okay, I'll give you his stats. His rookie year stats are he was 7-9. His sophomore year stats is he was 8-8. His junior year stats, he was 8-8. Did he get any better?
Did he get better? Yes, he got better. And this is where I'm going to argue with you on this, and I always do, because ultimately, Ron, I will say it in front of the world, you are right when it comes to quarterback play, where the quarterback is blamed for the things that go wrong and they're praised for the things that go good. But what a lot of people, analysts on TV, they never take into account is let's go ahead and go from this. You know how many times he was sacked in 13 when he threw for almost 4,000 yards?
Oh, it was like 70 times. Something like
actually,
that.
Actually, it wasn't
68,
that high.
Something like. Are you talking about the year
58 times is how many times he was sacked.
Yeah, he's been sacked 130 something times in 3 years, which is the most in the NFL. But it's not all the. There has been arguments from the pros. When I say the pros, I mean the analysts, the professional analysts, as to how many of these sacks have been on him versus how many of these sacks are on his team. Now, the year he was sacked a ridiculous amount of times, not last year, but the year before, when the O line had a real bad year and he was just getting sacked five times a game. I actually pulled up some stats on that. Oh, what is that site? It's the Pro Football something or other. I'm sure 100 people listening, if there was 100 people listening, could tell me. The 10 people listening, I'm sure someone out there could tell me what site I'm talking about. But there's a site that gives you really good, and they break down statistics ridiculously. And they said of those sacks that year, the year he had the big sack total, they could only truly equate, only 5 on Tannehill. And then there was, I mean, that's not many. And then the rest, there was a bunch on the O-line. They had a certain amount blamed on tight ends and a whole bunch played on the backs or laid on the backs for not blocking correctly or not getting their blocking assignment or just not having a good block. So, I mean, I'll give you that. But then I've heard other people say, no, it's way more than that because they say his pocket presence is bad and it's hard. I know it's hard for me, especially as a fan. It's really hard for me to know when I see a dude get sacked, unless he held onto the ball for 7 seconds. I don't necessarily know what happened.
Now, me playing, I've played the position of quarterback, not obviously at that level because, you know, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. But I know that when that ball snapped, if you haven't got a receiver within about 3 seconds, you're in trouble. Let's just face it, you're in trouble. And when you get in that kind of trouble, it's going to hurt. I'm just going to let you know that. It's probably going to hurt a little bit. But even with him getting sacked that many times, he still threw for 4,000 yards. and only threw, I think, what, 17 or 18 picks. Now, in my opinion, maybe nobody else's opinion, in my opinion, that's a win for Tannehill, because you've got a garbage offensive line, you got garbage backs that can't block for anything, yet you still manage to throw 4,000 yards. Maybe they were desperate throws that you happen to get lucky with. We'll give a little bit of percentage for that. Mm-hmm. But you threw 17 picks. So under pressure, Tannehill, if I'm not mistaken, was one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league.
That's correct. That same year that he had all those sacks, he had the second highest passer rating while being blitzed. The first highest was I think it was like RG3 or something. I don't remember who it was, but I remember specifically that season, he was number two passer rating off when being blitzed.
And I'm going to add something else to that year. Even being sacked 58 times and throwing for 4,000 yards, he was still almost 61% completion ratage.
Yeah, and then last year his completion ratage was through the roof, but
and it went up.
He was throwing a lot of little short dinks and dunks. I mean, that's what he does.
Okay, that's
not dinks and dunks, but he throws a lot. I think he throws a lot more medium type passes, 10, 15 yards. He throws those beautifully. I mean beautifully. Even 20 yard passes, very, very. To me, I see a lot of accuracy. I've heard he struggles with accuracy. I don't see it in the 10, 15, 20 range. I don't see him struggling with accuracy.
But the biggest thing is talking about, you know, dinks and dunks or the mid-range passes. Tom Brady has destroyed how many teams doing that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's all scheme. I mean, he just throws that little dink to the – and that was always my thing for why I specifically say that – oh, people say we don't have a number one wide receiver. This is what they said before the draft. Now all of a sudden they think DeVante Parker's our number one receiver. I'm excited about Parker, especially for the future, but the guy's a rookie. Our number one receiver this year is going to be Jarvis Landry, period. He's going to be number one out of the slot. That kind of scheme, that kind of thought process fits what Tannehill wants to do and what he does well to a T. And what Lazor wants to do, it fits it. It's a perfect puzzle piece with that. Jarvis Landry is going to catch, if he stays healthy, 100 to 110 balls this season. And that is not a huge jump off what he did last year as a rookie, catching 80-plus.
But not only that, another thing what a lot of people don't know about Tannehill, I mean, some of the big fans that really dig into it, Tannehill is, I believe last year or maybe the year before, one of the most, if not the most accurate quarterback in the league on the run.
Oh, he's dude. They don't do that enough. Two years ago, they didn't do it at all. I mean, it's like they didn't do it at all. That guy is so good throwing the ball on the run. So good on the run.
And me and you have talked about this also. You know, his first year, 2012, 2013, you know, we complained because he wouldn't get rid of the ball fast enough. And even the practices we went through, we said the same. We said the same thing. He's not getting rid of the ball quick enough. He's just not getting rid of the ball quick enough.
He still struggles with that a little bit. I mean, he still does.
But there's one thing that he does now more than he did in 12 and 13. And that is now he'll go through his progressions and you'll see him. But if it's not there, he'll take off and run with it. He won't just sit there. And listen, Tannehill's got wheels, man. He can run.
That's actually what raises his – that's some of the argument – not to talk about a bunch of fantasy football in May, but that was actually some of the argument for the people, the fantasy guys that like him, was that he's getting better and better and better. He's got a really good receiving core, and we're going to throw Jordan Cameron in on that. Miller and Ajayi that can both catch the ball, all those. I mean, he's got seven guys he can throw the ball to. There's not many guys in the NFL that say that. And he runs. He gives you some nice runs. Sometimes he gives you 30, 40, 50-yard runs. He definitely does that, man. I wish he would run more. I mean, I know it's a little dangerous, but he is not a Russell Wilson kind of runner. Like, he doesn't evade. He doesn't juke. He's not Russell Wilson. He is just a straight line. Like, he looks like a wide receiver. When he runs the ball, he looks like a wide receiver after he caught the ball. That is what Absolutely. He looks like. He just gets that ball, and once he's got the ball, it's not a ton of juking. It's just, I'm taking off. I'm gone. I would like to know what his 40 speed. I never actually looked that up to see what his 40 speed was in the combine. It's got to be pretty decent. He's pretty quick. And he can take hits, man. The guy looks skinny, but the guy can take some shots.
And the funny thing is he'll take shots. He'll get up and he'll smile about it as he's running back to the huddle because you can just tell he's loving playing football. He just loves it.
He's got that part of Brett Favre's game.
Absolutely.
He just enjoys the heck out of playing the game. I don't know how much of a leader he really is. He seems kind of reserved. He still just looks so young, but I don't know. This is going to be his fourth season. I hope that he steps up and leads that locker room.
I mean, it is going to be his fourth season, but I mean, and once again, I'm going to defend him. And if, you know, Mr. Tannehill, if you ever listen to this, I'm gonna defend him, and I'm just gonna say it that, you know, his first college year, he learned how to be quarterback, and then he was thrown into the mix as the NFL. So technically, he was a rookie in more ways than one his first season in the NFL. He was still a rookie at the position. So technically, I don't even count his first year. And his numbers weren't horrible for his first year in the NFL by any stretch, especially with the O-line that he had. The second year, it got better, and it seemed like the O-line was worse, you know, the second year than his first year. And he's progressively gotten better. When you called out the stats of 7-9, 8-8, you know,
those are important stats. Those are the stats that are driving me the most crazy.
They're important stats about the team. This show is about Ryan Tannehill, and he's gotten better. Now, I'm going to tell you this. If he doesn't take another progressive step forward and he kind of plateaus with the weapons he's got now, and you just called it out, seven different weapons to throw to.
Yeah, seven different guys that I consider viable. Well, I mean, including Matthews in that, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how well that, you know, that's really going to work out. Well, I'll take that back. I'm not including Matthews in that because you've got Landry, Jennings, Stills, Parker, Cameron, Ajayi, and Miller. No, Matthews would be, if he actually stuck around. I mean, we'd heard a few months ago he wasn't happy. Now we hear it again because he keeps getting bumped down to the fifth wide receiver and he thinks he's better than that. No, he's got seven legitimate guys without Matthews to throw the ball to. I don't know that you could go to any team in the NFL besides the Dolphins and say, I can see this guy being, I can see seven different guys like making a difference in the offense and having productivity in the offense. Now, obviously, seven guys aren't going to catch 60, 50, 70, 80, 90 balls. That's impossible. Or Tannehill would throw for 6,000 yards and 65 touchdowns. But I mean, they're all going to contribute.
Well, I mean, and I got to give credit to, you know, Philbin and the entire
I give no credit to Philbin for anything, but let's talk about that on a different show. We'll do a Joe Philbin show.
I mean, the organization as a whole to get these weapons around Tannehill.
Hickey and Tannenbaum.
You know, to help him, you know, to help him progressively get better. But, I mean, sooner or later, it's going to come to a point where Tannehill's numbers are going to have to go way up, touchdown-wise.
I'm tired. I'm not caring about the touchdowns, yes. Beyond the touchdowns and not throwing a lot of interceptions, I just can't get stuck on what his percentage is and how many yards he throws. The dude needs to win games for us. He needs to put this team that is a good enough team on his back and win some games he shouldn't win and do better on third down because his third down numbers suck.
Okay,
do better in the fourth quarters because his fourth quarter numbers suck. When we need him the most, he isn't good enough for us.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Okay, the close games that we lost last year, Detroit, Green Bay.
I already know what you're going to say. I already know what you're going to say. He gave them a lead. He gave them a lead, and they couldn't hold it.
My question is, who do you blame for those losses?
The defense. I have to blame the defense. They had the lead and they couldn't hold it. But you can't hold Calvin Johnson and Aaron Rodgers. You got to score more points than what we scored.
Hold on. My point is this. You blame the defense. If we win those two games, do you think that changes our season?
Oh yeah, we're in the playoffs.
Then enough said. I'm not saying another word.
But we have more time, so you have to say more words. We still have at least 20 minutes to talk.
I mean, I don't want to sit there and blame, you know, he's just not winning enough games for us. He's just not – listen, the weight of the blame game has got to be taken off the shoulders of the quarterback.
Okay.
It has to.
But I'm gonna reverse it some. And I don't remember the exact scores of those games, but I remember they weren't high-scoring games. The defense had held – some of the better offense. Well, Detroit's a good offense. Calvin Johnson is obviously, in my opinion,
right,
probably
course.
Still the best receiver in the league. I mean, I know Dez Bryant and Demaryius Thomas might have something to say about that now, but Calvin Johnson is, in my opinion, still the best receiver in the league. A guaranteed Hall of Famer. I mean, guaranteed Hall of Famer.
Oh, yes.
If we were given the defense a 35-29 lead and they couldn't hold it, that's on the defense. But, man, the defense had held. Like, that first half in that Green Bay game was crap. Our offense was garbage in that game. And the defense held their own against the freaking Packers. And they kept holding. Eventually, it's going to break. It's Aaron Rodgers. He's the best quarterback in the NFL. The defense gave the offense enough chances to score more points because the Green Bay doesn't have a huge stellar defense. Our defense was better than theirs. That's my point. I understand that the last play was the straw that broke the camel's back, but the straw that broke the camel's back was really we didn't score enough points. Tannehill threw one or zero touchdowns in 8 of 16 games last year. That is not going to get it done and get wins unless you're running the heck out of the ball.
Okay. Well, then once again, let me ask you this. Okay? And this is – you know, I'm the defender of Tannehill – and you are finding ways to put the blame on him. I'm not saying that's what you're doing.
I like Tannehill, and I think he has a lot of skill, but he's got to start winning games.
You don't think that has anything to do with play calling? Because we heard last year players complaining about the play calls.
We have blamed play calling for our lack of offense since 2009. 2008, we have been blaming. We blame Dan Henning, then we blame... what was that? Brian DeBalls, whatever his name was. And then we blamed whoever the dude was. We had Philbin's first, Mike Sherman. Now we're going to blame Bill Lazor. Let's just keep blaming the play calling. I'm tired of blaming the play calling. I don't want to hear about the play calling anymore.
Listen, how many times, and this is where I'll defend Ryan Tannehill till the sun don't shine, when he completes, do you know what his percentage rate is between inside the red zone?
Well, probably not very good because we were the number one team to get to the red zone, but we were only like 11th in scoring. So I'm imagining, I don't know the exact number, it's probably not all that great.
Well, I don't know what it is, but if the quarterback throws the ball and the receiver catches the ball and you don't get a first down or you don't score, whose fault is it?
Give me the scenario again because I'm not following.
Well, what I'm saying is we're blaming Tannehill for not throwing enough touchdowns. If you've got, and I'll just use Mike Wallace, for example. Okay, let's just use Mike Wallace. Mike Wallace knows where the first down marker's at. Mike Wallace knows where the end zone's at. And they don't play to that marker, but Tannehill throws an accurate ball. The receiver catches the ball. Once the receiver catches the ball, whose responsibility is it to make a play?
It's the receiver.
So if Tannehill gets the ball to him, his responsibility is now over. Unless, obviously, the pocket collapses, he has to roll out, and you have to cut off your route as a receiver to come back to help your quarterback. I mean, those things do happen, yes. Bottom line, once the ball is in the air and it's thrown accurately to a receiver, it is the receiver's responsibility to get those 10 yards, to get those 3 yards, to get those 7 yards, whatever the case may be. Are you always going to get it? Of course you're not always going to get it. Somebody can be on top of you.
New England gets it every time.
You get stopped. You know,
every time New England always gets it. They've got 8 yards to go. They throw it one, and they freaking get the first down. Drives me crazy. I know, I didn't mean to get off on a rant, but it just drives me nuts. I saw Welker do that like 1,000 times in 5 years.
But that's my point with blaming Tannehill for not throwing enough touchdowns or not having a good red zone percentage, whatever that was. I don't know what it was.
I'm not getting on his case for specific stats. I'm giving him more accountability for our record. Bottom line, this whole conversation for me is I like Tannehill. I see him throw some balls, and I try not to fall in love too much with individual passes because I know Henny sometimes would throw the ball a certain way and be like, dang, that was a was a cannon. That was a throw. I've seen Tannehill throw enough and make enough throws to know that this guy has some skills, has a certain set of, not to sound like Liam Neeson here, but he has a certain set of skills to to play the position at a very high level. But for whatever reason, it's just not equating to wins. It's just not. And I understand that the deep ball thing is an issue. The sacks are an issue. And there's other things. It is a 53-man team sport. I will give you that. It is not just on Tannehill. But I'm telling you right now, in 2015, unless, knock on wood, unless we suffer some serious injuries with that throughout our roster, in 2015, if he doesn't get us to the playoffs, in with this roster and this receiving core, and can't put us on our back on his back enough times to get us there, to get us to 9 or 10 wins and get us into the playoffs, I think the writing's on the wall. That's what I'm saying. Do I believe he can do it? I personally, honestly, after saying all this, I personally do believe he's going to do it, but he hasn't done it yet, and I'm putting more accountability. Now, I'm going to say something that I, and I've mentioned this 100 times, I am a huge fan of Omar Kelly. You know I follow him religiously. You know I'm on this dude's jock because he gives great information and he says it like it is. I follow him on Twitter. Every day I read like all his tweets all day. It's like a little novella at the end of the night. I read like every tweet at the end of the night he says about the Dolphins. He does a show with Miko Grimes, which I've mentioned before, on 560 WQAM. Miko Grimes is the husband of Brent Grimes. And I tell you what, this girl, and I almost think like maybe they got on her, maybe the Dolphins got on her, because I noticed she's kind of backed off a little and hasn't said a lot. But for the last 2 months straight, she's been killing Tannehill. She's been killing Tannehill, calling him. She says the word average, but you can hear in her tone that she thinks he's just garbage. I really feel that if you had an honest conversation off the radio, off the record, she would say, this dude's hot garbage. He ain't getting us nowhere. That scares me, because if Miko Grimes thinks that, you're going to tell me that Brent Grimes doesn't think that? And the number one defensive player, maybe now the number two with Sue, defensive player on your squad, thinks that your quarterback is hot garbage and he's the reason you're not getting to the playoffs. Guess what? He's probably not the only defense. And now, how much of that defense in that locker room doesn't trust their quarterback? That it's telling to me, and it also makes me very nervous, because they see it up close and personal more than anybody else besides the offensive players. They see it. They play against the guy. They play against the guy. They know better than anybody. It makes me nervous. I'm not saying that they're right, and I'm not even saying that's the case. Maybe Miko Grimes thinks this guy is hot garbage, and Brent, like, man, you need to get off this dude's back. I think he's good. I think he's going to get us there. I don't know, but that makes me nervous to know that somebody with that deep of inside information has that opinion of Ryan Tannehill.
Well, I don't know, man. I know that when things don't go well in a game, the quarterback is the first one to get blamed, no matter what. No matter what. If it doesn't go well, like, for instance, if the only way a quarterback does not get blamed for a loss is if a team throws up 35, 40 points, and they lose 45 to 40.
And we're not going to lose games like that with our defense either, because you know I still think it's the best defense in the league this year.
The quarterback is not going to get blamed for that stuff. But in all honesty, as much football as we've watched, as much as we've listened to, you know, criticisms and stuff, how many times does a loss always get put on the quarterback's shoulders? All the time. Now, agreed, when you take that position, you know that you're going to get the blame for every bad thing.
Yeah, it's in the brochure, man. It's in the brochure. Exactly. When you open up the brochure, it says, you know, you're going to get credit, you're going to get blame.
When you fill out the application before you sign your name, it says you're going to get blamed for everything. You know, that's the way it is. But it's just, once again, it takes me back to exactly what I've said before. It takes a total team effort to win it. If the defense is holding the team to 0 points or 3 points or 10 points and you can't put more than 10 points on the board, you got problems. Let's just say it.
That's true. Okay? Especially when you're going against average defenses, a little bit better than average. defenses. You know, unless you're going against going against like our defense, and maybe you're going to struggle some against the Bills, Jets. They'll all have good defenses, but I mean, we got enough talent on offense to put points on the board. We got more than enough talent on defense to shut teams down. If we go 8-8 and again, I just don't think our quarterback's good enough to get us anywhere. But we should, in my opinion, I think we're going to win 10 games this year. That's my opinion. I think we're going to win 10 games because I honestly do believe that Tannehill is going to bring us there. I think this is the year he clicks. I think this is the year he makes it happen, and I truly believe that. I'm just telling you that I'm making him accountable for these last three seasons, especially the last couple. These 8-8 seasons, he needed to do better. He had done better. We'd have made the playoffs both years. When you just need to beat the Jets and the Bills 2 years ago, just one of those games, they go 9-7, and you put up 7 points in two games. I'm not supposed to blame the quarterback for that. He doesn't. 7 points total in two games. How does that not fall 80% on that man's shoulders? It does, in my opinion.
I mean, I don't know, man. And maybe I'm a little biased because I've played the position before, but I do agree that there's some accountability that the quarterback plays. You know, you are the field general. You're the captain. You're out there. You're running the show. You know, but ultimately it boils down to this.
Wait. Did you say it boils down? Dude, you seriously need to get out of Tennessee and back to Florida. It boils down? How, like balls? Like, what are you saying?
Earl changes. It boils down to if the quarterback throws the football, as soon as the quarterback throws that ball and the ball's caught by the receiver, his responsibility, in my opinion, is now over. It's done. Now it's on the receiver's blocking. Now it's on the receiver making a move and getting, you know, yak. You know, it's the receiver's responsibility. It's not Ryan Tannehill's. Ryan Tannehill is responsible for the play at the line of scrimmage, the audible, reading the defense, calling the play, snapping the ball, finding the open receiver. Done. That's it. Once the ball's thrown and it's in the receiver's hands, his responsibility is done. It's done.
I will say this, though, and me and you know this from being at games. When you're at a football game, and we've seen Chad Pennington play live. Dude, when you see Pennington play, you know what accuracy looks like. Now, he didn't have a cannon. But man, I remember that. I remember just the practice that we went to.
Not
the game. We talk about practice. I just remember the ball, the way the ball came out of the dude's hands. You were just like, God, that guy just throws it differently than other quarterbacks. When you see Tannehill play live, you can see the accuracy, some of those accuracy struggles when he's pushing that ball past 20 yards better than you can see on TV. You can really see, especially, I think most of that is because last time I think we sat in zone side, didn't we?
Yes.
And we were sitting in zone side, and when they were going away from us, you could really see, even the ones he was completing, you could see some struggles there. Now, I will give you a stat that I found very interesting, and I wish I could remember. I was listening to the radio. A guy called in. He has had a very thick, heavy accent, so it was a little hard to understand. But man, this guy,
Bowls.
this guy, not that kind of accent, but this guy laid out some amazing stats, just amazingly good stats that just had me like, wow, that's interesting. I didn't know. But one of the stats was, and I believe it was like the last 8, 9, it was like the last 10 games of the season, which is more than half the season. Mm-hmm. Tannehill was the 7th rated quarterback in the NFL through those games. That was interesting. So, and if you go back and you look at his game by game stats, the first 3 games of the season, he had like 70 something passer rating. Mm-hmm. And then he had a couple games or two. Then he had like another bad game or two. And then after that, pretty much for the most part, he took off. But the thing about 2014 was he had some of the highest passer rating games of his career, but he also had a few of the lowest too. So he struggled to be consistent last year, but they put more on his shoulders because he didn't have Sherman there to baby him anymore. It was Laser now. Laser wasn't going to baby him. He's going to make him make it happen. I just hope that this season he can take away some of those inconsistent low games that he has for whatever reason. I mean, the Jacksonville game, man. I mean, you can't tell me the defense didn't win the Jacksonville game. I mean, that was sad. I mean, how are you going to do that against Jacksonville?
I agree, and I remember, you know, being up here in Nashville. I remember sitting at Buffalo Wild Wings watching that game, and I had a guy that was sitting off to the side. I think he was a Colt fan or something. And he looked at me, and of course I was showing my frustration, slamming my hand on the table or whatever the case may be. And he kind of looked at me, and he goes, "You guys are struggling against Jacksonville." And I just kind of looked at him, and I'm thinking, you know, if he wasn't bigger than me, I might have slapped him in the face. But it's just, it's one of those things where, I mean, yeah, there was a lot of games where, I mean, there were some games like the Chargers. The Chargers, we absolutely obliterated the Chargers, 37-0. I mean, offensively, we were hitting on 10 cylinders. Forget 8. I mean, we graduated to 10. We couldn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, that was the best. That's the best game we've had in years. That's probably the best game we've had since the third game in the 2008 season when we unveiled the Wildcat and smashed the Patriots. That was probably the best game since then.
I mean, and then I remember one game that we went to against Buffalo. We beat them like 38-3.
That was the 2010 or 11 season. That was Matt Moore. That was the year that we were trying to suck for luck, and then we got good for Hill. I don't know, but
38-6 or something, and we were offensively, defensively, everything was clicking.
There was three fines levied by the Dolphins players against the Dolphins players in that game for the hitting. They were wrecking people, man, that game. They were wrecking people. That was nice to see live. Man, we had good seats for that game.
We were
kind enough to get some tickets from some season ticket holders, which I really wish I would. Yeah. I hope to one day be a season ticket holder. And we had some nice – and even though it was raining, it didn't matter. We were having fun.
It didn't matter at all.
We had some really drunk Dolphins fans around us. Really
yes,
drunk.
Yes, we did, man. But made you know it, what? Made it we better. Never moved. We never moved, even in the rain, because if the players can get wet and play, we can sit there and watch them in the rain. It don't matter.
That's true.
But, I mean, it's I will agree. Now, the question I was going to ask you, and you kind of got me off track of it.
I'm sorry. I'm a bad host.
Do you?
I'm a mediocre. If you want a mediocre host, just call me for all your hosting events.
Do you think 10-6 gets us in the playoffs?
Oh, yeah.
With our division?
Oh yeah, it's not about the division. Yeah, especially with that. There's a lot of good teams in the AFC East. There's a lot of depth in the AFC East. They're going to beat up on each other. The East is going to beat up on each other. The North is going to beat up on each other. There's even some decent teams in the West that are going to beat up on each other. I pretty much think that the South is just locked. It's just one of those divisions that's just locked. But I think the East is different this year. And 10 wins is going to get you a wild card spot. It's not going to win the division when you're in the AFC East unless something really goes south. Unless you have like the perfect storm, kind of like in 2008 when we won 11 games and Brady went out and all that. 10 wins is going to get it. Man, 9 wins would have probably – well, I don't think 9 wins would have gotten it last year. It had to have been the right 9 wins, and it wasn't. The year before, 9 wins would have gotten it.
Do you think – and I put you on the spot, but you probably know the schedule like back of your hand. Maybe not when we play, but who we play. Could you think you could call out the 10 wins that you think we're going to get?
Ooh, that'd be tough. Okay, I don't actually have the schedule memorized, but, man, that's tough. That's interesting.
We play the North.
Let me think about that for a minute. Yeah, we do play the North. We play the North. We play the East, the NFC East.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to go with this. I'm trying to think. What's been the crawl on our side is our divisional record. We can never seem to get more than 3 wins out of it, even when the teams are bad. And the teams are better this year. So let's just say, for sake of argument, we go 3-3. We get 3 out of the 6 wins. So we need another 7 wins in the next 10. We beat the Redskins. We beat the Eagles. I say we get 3 out of 4. 3 out of 4 out of the NFC East. I'm not a believer in that division. I'm not a believer in Dallas. They're starting Darren McFadden as their running back. Yeah, good luck running against Sue and company with that. And Brent Grimes already shown that he can stay with Calvin Johnson. He can stay with Dez Bryant.
I agree.
Just my opinion on that one. So there's another 6 wins. But now we need There's seven. Oh yeah, that's because the Redskins were part of the NFC East. So we play. So we beat Cleveland because we play. You said we play the North, right? So I say we beat Cleveland.
I think so.
I say we beat the Steelers. That's a tougher game, but I say we beat them. That gives us eight. We beat. Don't we play the Jaguars again? I can't remember. I'm trying to remember every single team we play. We play Baltimore again. See, that's going to be the game, man. It's going to happen again, just like last year. When I turned off my freaking TV and I didn't even want to watch football for like 6 months, I swear to you, I will admit this on this podcast. I turned off my TV at the end of the third quarter and I couldn't bear to watch it. I didn't even want to watch football again, like the rest of my life for a while. I was so defeated because I thought for sure we were going to go in and it's like our defense is physical. It's going to happen. We're going to make it happen. And man, it just didn't happen. It didn't happen.
Not at all.
It just didn't happen. It's going to come down to that game. Forget the division. Forget all that. We beat Baltimore. We're going to the playoffs, and we're winning 10 games. Period. End of story. We lose to Baltimore. We get manhandled again like by being a bunch of you-know-whats, going in there and get our tails kicked again. We're not going to the playoffs, and it's all going to get broken down again.
But to go back to the subject of the show, you said if we go 3-3
in the division. That's just the way we roll. That's the way we roll, man. We are not the best division players. We're going to win three out of the six.
That means we have to win 70% of our remaining games. So how much confidence do you have in Tannehill?
I got enough confidence that he can win outside the division. I'm scared about the Baltimore game. That's going to be the question mark. That'll be the difference.
Do we play Baltimore in Baltimore or Miami?
I think it's in Miami because we play it towards the end of the season, and I'm pretty sure it's in Miami because a lot of our games at the second half of the season are in Miami because the beginning of our schedule is like we don't even know where Miami is. They lost Miami. They're everywhere but Miami.
No freezing games in Foxborough. No cold weather games up there against
– tough teams, you know, though. Tough teams we got to play.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. So, I mean – I don't know, man. I just – that's why I said 7-9, 8-8, 9-7. And a lot of the reason I said that –
Don't we play the Colts this year, though? So I'm not even sure if we – you know, I should have the – I'm doing a podcast. I should have the stupid schedule in front of me. Sorry, guys. I'm sure other people are saying, we don't play the North. We play the South. So maybe we play the South. If we play the South, I like that better because we seem to play the Colts well no matter how good they are.
I think we do because we play Tennessee.
Oh, if we play Tennessee in Indianapolis, then we play the South. So that means Baltimore is our
Nashville.
We finished third in the division. They finished third in the division. Therefore, that was one of those two games. That's why we play Baltimore.
Which means we also play the Texans.
We play the Texans, who we've yet to ever beat. We are way overdue.
Exactly.
So we play the Texans. See, I like it. It's gonna come. It's still gonna come down to the Baltimore game. I know all these division games: Patriots this, Jets that, whatever. I'm telling you right now, it's coming down to the Baltimore game. When we were 1-15, instead of 0-16, who'd we beat?
Baltimore.
Thank you,
Greg Camarillo.
The last few times we've actually gotten to the playoffs, which I believe was. In when we had that really good defense, like in the mid-2000s, and in 2008, we got smashed in the playoffs. Which team smashed us?
Baltimore.
Both times, right? Both times, if I'm not mistaken, both times?
You're right. Baltimore's our kryptonite. There's no doubt about
it. Dude, Baltimore crushes us. Crushes us. I mean, we've been to the playoffs, what, three times since Marino left? And two of the times, I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, we lost to Baltimore.
I think you're right.
Baltimore, everybody talks about this team's our nemesis, that team's our nemesis. First of all, we got to figure out how to beat the Texans. I mean, come on, dude. We couldn't beat them when they were like 2 years into the league. We couldn't beat this team. That's ridiculous. The Texans are not that good. I understand they got a pretty good defense. They are not that good. We should be beating the Texans. And dude, we have to figure out a way to beat Baltimore. We're going to be 3-3 in our division. I just accept that. We'll probably split with all three teams. Maybe we get lucky and we beat up on somebody. Maybe the Jets or the Bills aren't as good as we think, but then we'll get swept by somebody else. It always works that way. All right, hey, we're going to play a little game now. I don't know if you remember this, Keith, but we played this game only for the sake of it last year just because it was fun to do. And I think we nailed Tannehill's touchdowns by doing this little exercise. We nailed Tannehill's touchdowns like almost to the touchdown, how many he would throw. So we're gonna play it again, and but we were very realistic with it. So let's be realistic this time. How many touchdowns we think each player gets, and that way we can do the math on Tannehill. Are you ready? Are you ready for this? Okay. I didn't prepare you for this, but okay,
no, you didn't.
So let's start with Parker. He's a rookie. He's a rookie. How many touchdowns do you think he gets?
I'm gonna say 6.
Dude, exactly what I thought. All right, so we're both on 6 on that one. Landry.
I think Landry's going to be – I think he'll be a little bit more than Parker.
Okay.
Only because I think the comfort level with Tannehill and Landry is different, obviously.
It is, and I think Landry's special. I think he's – slot receiver-wise, he's elite, my opinion.
I think we'll go 9.
Okay, I wrote down 8, so 9. That's close. Okay. Stills.
I'm going to have to go with 5.
I wrote 4, so we're close. Jennings.
I think Jennings will get 4.
I wrote 5, so we're only one off so far. Cameron. This is a question mark because it's hard to see this guy staying in for 16 games, but we're going to pretend for the sake of this exercise. How many does Cameron get?
I'm going to go with 6.
I'll go with that. Like around the Clay range.
Yes.
5 to 7, 6 split the difference. That's fair. Sims, second tight end. If you didn't know, which I know you do.
I mean, maybe. Maybe 2. Maybe.
You're going 2. Okay, I went 3. I'm going to go, let's just say backs. Let's not say Miller, Ajayi, Williams. Okay, let's just say all the backs out of the backfield.
I don't think they're going to have – I think backs total 3.
Really? The way Miller and Ajayi can both catch the ball and the way Tannehill likes to throw short, you only think 3?
I'm going to say 3.
Why? I wrote 6, and I didn't think 6 was a big number considering what I just said.
I'm going to go with 3 only because of Parker being as big of a target as he is, and I'm going to go with Cameron. And we are thinking of Cameron being in for a full 16 games, so I'm going to think of Cameron, and I'm also going to think of Jennings only because of his experience in route running. That's the biggest thing with him. I think Tannehill is going to become more comfortable with throwing the ball into the end zone, and the backs are going to be used like Lamar Miller will be used to hand it off and run it into the end zone. I don't think we're going to be throwing – I don't think we're going to be inside the 10-yard line throwing to the backs. That's my opinion.
Okay. I've got an other category. I can't remember if we did this last year. I think we did.
Okay.
I just got an other category. Obviously, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, let's say 3 backs, 7, 8, 9. You likely think throughout an entire season, somewhere along the way, some other dude is going to catch some touchdowns, whether it be if Matthews is still around, or another fifth wide receiver to be named later, Matt Hazel, your boy from Bama, what's his name? I'm sorry, I don't even know his
Christian
name.
Jones,
okay,
baby.
Christian Jones, somebody who makes this team as a fifth or sixth receiver, a third tight end, a fourth back. You know, LaMichael James, something. Okay. You know what I mean? How many touchdowns do you put in the other category?
I'll go 1. I mean, we'll give him. We'll give him. I'll give him a little treat.
One other touchdown the entire season to other dudes.
Absolutely.
Beyond these 9.
Absolutely.
Okay, I went 3.
Okay.
Let me just figure somewhere along the way.
Okay.
All right, so now you're going to make me do math in my head. I might probably pause it. So it'll seem like I did it really fast when somebody listens to the podcast. So that's... Oh, did it take him? He said that. He stopped the show. He hit pause. He grabbed a calculator. He pulled out his fingers, his toes. All right, hold on 1 second. I'm sorry, now I forgot. You said 1?
Yeah.
And I say 3. All right, so I'm going to do the math on this. Are you ready? So 15, 20, 24, 36. You got 36 touchdowns. Okay. Remember, we only missed this, I think, by one when, last year. By
I doing think this it was, exercise. One or two, yeah.
Now, the mixture ended up different. Obviously, we didn't correctly predict the amount of touchdowns each person caught. I think
Wallace
caught more. We didn't think Landry would do anything. He caught some. Some guys, Brian Hartline caught less, which he usually did. But it ended up the same. Like I said, you ended up with 36, and I got 14. 18, 23, 29, 32, 38, 41. I'm going to go with your number of 36 sounding a lot more accurate. How did it get so far off? I see where it got far off.
It got far off where you went 6, I went 3,
See, towards the end there, 6 and 3, 3 and 1, yeah, it started to skew a little. So, somewhere between 36 and 41 touchdowns Tannehill will throw this year. If he does that, we're going to the playoffs. We're going to the playoffs. So if he does that. Now, we were pretty close last year, but it wasn't on record because it was just a couple boys talking on the cell phone.
Right.
Now we've got an official record. So we'll pull it out at the end of the season. We'll pull out all these numbers. We'll pull out the record for this show, the tape for the show, and see. I'll have to save this. I'll slice this aside when I edit it and just put it in a file somewhere.
And I believe that by throwing that, I believe that his interceptions need to go down. But he didn't really throw that many.
If he stays somewhere around 12, 13, 14 interceptions, I can live with that. It's way less than Eli Manning, who throws like 20-something every year. And it's less than a lot of times Brett Favre would throw. And I think Brett Favre was awesome.
I think last year Tannehill threw 12 interceptions. So if he throws 36 to 41 touchdowns and 12 interceptions, I will take that all day. I would pack that and take that to Vegas.
Because you figure if he threw about 44 to 4,500 yards with that. Now, I don't have I'm not staring at one of those calculators that'll give you – you put in the stats and you can get player rating. Because I think we did that.
Right.
We did it with that, trying to calculate what we thought his rating would be. What would it take to get a 90? And that, those stats
kind of put
him around a 90. And that's about where he ended up when it was all said and done. I would guess that those stats will push him up into the high 90s. 36 would push him into the high 90s. 41 would push him over 100. He has an over 100 rating. We're going to the playoffs. With this defense?
Oh, of course.
With this defense?
Of course.
There's no way. I mean, 41 touchdowns is a lot of touchdowns. Even in today's NFL, that's a lot of touchdowns. I think we're closer to your number. I see the mid-30s for him.
If he throws 41 touchdowns and only 12 picks and 4,500 yards, I will even go on record saying not only do we go to the playoffs, we could go deep into the playoffs with this defense. We could go deep.
With this defense, because this is a championship caliber defense. I don't care what Tannehill does. I don't care what the offense does. I say they're number one. Let's say they're not number one. We talked about maybe they're number four, they're number five. That is a championship caliber Super Bowl winning defense we have on the other side. We got enough players. Tannehill needs to bring it home for us. He is the difference. He will be the difference of us winning or not winning. There'll be we have a tendency to look at individual plays. We want to say, oh, this guy did this in this game, this guy did that in that game, this guy did that in that game. But when you take it as a whole and put it all together and look at all the play of the entire team, when we started off this podcast, we said the difference between Aaron Rodgers on this team and Tannehill was, your opinion was 2 to 3, my opinion was 3 to 4 games. That's the difference between not making the playoffs and making a deep playoff run. That's the difference between being an average team and being a team contending. So tell me, based off that, whether you like Tannehill or whether you don't, whether you think he's good or whether you think he's garbage, he's going to be the difference this year. His play is going to be the difference.
And, I mean, I can't disagree with that, especially with what he's got now. They have, in my opinion, they've made moves to build up that offensive line in front of him. They've given him backs in the backfield that can block. They have given him a tight end that's a big target. They've given him receivers out the yin-yang, okay, to throw to. Big receivers, fast receivers, slot receivers. You've got, I believe, Jarvis Landry last year was the number one receiver in the league in yards after the catch. So
was it him or was it Stills? I thought Stills was like one of the guys that did that. I don't remember. I never really heard that stat.
Well, I know that we have both of them on our offense. So
that's true. That's true. They're both on our team either way.
In that case, with that defense we've got, I mean, if you're absolutely right, if Tannehill does not get better again this year and throw a lot more touchdowns, I mean, there's going to be some reset buttons hit in Miami when it comes to the quarterback position. I have no doubt.
And the coaching and the coach too.
Absolutely.
We go 8-8 again. Goodbye coach for sure, and maybe goodbye quarterback, or at least looking for the next quarterback, whether Tannehill plays or not. Maybe gets one of those lucky years where you know, they couldn't find anybody, so they're going with what they got. He's on his fifth year option. He would be in that in that case. But they're looking for someone else, like which right now as we speak they are not. They're still, you know, they're rolling with Tannehill, and they should. They should. He's been good enough to roll with them. But any last thoughts, man, before we wrap up the show?
No, man, that's about it, dude. I think this was actually a pretty good conversation, man. There was a lot of points that were brought up that I hadn't thought about.
Yeah, and you brought up some stuff, too, I definitely didn't think about. And I went in this, and you told me before the show, I was like, you got any notes? You're like, nope. And you're like, you? Nope. I just wanted to go note-free and just chat like a couple dudes talking about the quarterback. Because that's what I wanted this show to be, and it's definitely what it ended up. It didn't really probably sound much different than the listeners, you guys talking with your friends over some beers, grilling, talking about Tannehill, is he good, is he bad? I mean, it's just that same kind of conversation. It's what it is. It's a fan podcast, and that's what it's meant to be. All right, man. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. I really appreciate it. Had a lot of fun. If you want to email the show, unsquishthefish@yahoo.com/gmail. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I don't tweet a whole lot, but I'll usually just tweet out if I got some episodes, and sometimes I'll retweet some stuff. But it's @unsquishthefish, and you can like the Facebook page, Unsquish the Fish. Appreciate you listening. Have a great week.